cannot disappear.
Maybe hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad, but
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knee, as Johnny said. Well, this is incredible.
Now will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome again to the Magic Sponge Podcast, a miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. My name is Brian Seney. Most of you know me as the guy behind the NRL Physio social media pages. James, after a big week one of the finals, how good you are here co-hosting with me again. How did you enjoy it, mate?
Really enjoyed it, Brian. The Friday game, the two Saturday games, unbelievable. The Sunday game, I enjoyed three beers and seven sin bins. So what a day for rugby league on a Sunday, Brian. Honestly, it was a bit of a schmozzle, wasn't it? But it's still very gripping and entertaining. And I think there's a little bit of media hype and slurp with that. But honestly, the two games on Saturday were some of the best games of footy I've seen. They were really, really top-notch games.
Oh, mate. Look, and this is probably I've always loved the Dolphins and stuff like that. But this is probably, I really made my transition over to the Dolphins when they got, it got announced that they're in. So this was kind of my first, I'd say, final series as a true, neutral, just with no allegiances, anything like that. And, oh, man, just so good. Like, so good as a neutral, just watching. And some really good sides. I was really impressed with Canberra. We spoke about it on the pod last week. I thought Melbourne were in a bit of trouble with all their injuries. But Canberra were just awesome. Cows awesome. Today was, a bit of, as you say, and we'll get to that, bit of a schmozzle. But overall, mate, finals footy, can't beat it, hey?
Yeah, long may it stay, and long live rugby league, in my opinion, Brian.
Love it, mate. So, guys, look, as always, this is your weekly one-stop shop for all things injury analysis in the NRL. We'll talk about the in-game injuries from the round just gone, talk about the big injury and rehab news from those in the casualty ward, and talk about recovery times, performance, and all that kind of stuff. Look, we've gone away from Supercoach scoring at the moment because, there's no more Supercoach left, but we'll definitely, talk about that leading into next year, any of these injuries, sort of how they'll implicate guys going into next season, and then obviously next year when we start back up. That's the kind of stuff we talk about. Same sort of thing with the Patreon. The Patreon sort of died down a little bit now with the season winding down, but I'll still be covering any guys heading into next year, into the World Cup, all that kind of stuff, with their injury situations, how it'll affect their performance, all that kind of thing. So if you are interested, patreon.com/NRLphysio. I'll definitely be pumping out some off-season content as we go along. But otherwise, let's get stuck in to the injuries from finals week one of the NRL and round four of the NRLW.
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time. I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
Game one, Brian, was on the Friday night. A pretty clinical performance by the Panthers there. That was really impressive with all their big dogs back. But the big concern here for the Eels, obviously, because they're going to be playing next week, is the concussion concern to Mitch Moses. He's facing a seven-day turnaround from that concussion. It was fairly nasty on the field. He sort of got his head in the wrong spot against, I think it was Billy Kikau's knee, I think. So he came off worse for wear from that. The other concern for the Panthers is an injury to Taylan May. He looked like he strained his hamstring there, sort of trying to stride out to catch a try or catch a cutout pass into the corner. Interesting one with Taylan because obviously he's facing too much ban in 2023, which I guess is a bit of an unusual situation in itself. But then he's also potentially facing a one-match ban from this game as well, from a incident where he was seen been earlier as well. So sort of murkies the waters there with his availability moving forward for the prelim and the final. Do you want to give us an update about thoughts on Mitch Moses and Taylan May to kick things off, Brian?
Yeah, so Moses, he's got a seven-day turnaround. I mean, all these guys with concussion, everyone's different. The thing I'll say, look, even though this one looked really nasty at the time, as we've spoken about in previous weeks, that doesn't mean it's a worse concussion in terms of recovery or anything like that. How the injury looks initially doesn't have implications for the overall recovery time for that concussion. So he's just as likely as any other person who suffered a concussion this weekend to be okay next week. Because it's under 10 days, he will need to see an independent neurologist specialist to get approval to play. Thing I'll say about Moses, yeah, just a bad tackle technique, and that might be a little bit weird coming from me, seeing I'm all about, you know, get the tackle height down, get the tackle height down. He just went way too low. Like, you know, he was in, as you said, I think he collected the knee, and getting down around the knees and the ankles isn't good for concussion risk either. There's a lot of space between the knees and the head that is, you know, a lot safer for the tackler's head to be in. Yeah, he just went way too low. So it was poor tackle technique. Don't let talking heads on any media tell you that, you know, it's an example of why low tackling is bad, because we're not talking about tackling guys around the knees all the time. We're talking about just taking it away from the head and to the torso. Taylor May with his hamstring. Yeah, look, it didn't look good. You know, sprinting mechanism, and he was leaning forward as well, so that adds that extra stretch to the hamstring. They've actually taken the early guilty plea on his ban for this year, so he will definitely miss the prelim, which I'm not surprised that they took it, purely because I reckon they're like, well, we'd be pushing him to come back for the prelim anyway, so let's just take the suspension and then hope we can get him back for the GF. I reckon it'd be touch and go, because even if it's a grade one, like a 2 to 4 week return to play, you know, do you take a guy coming off, you know, 2 weeks off, he plays in a position where he, you know, relies on top end speed, all that kind of stuff, into a grand final? It's going to be a fairly big call for the Panthers. They might have to carry, I think the Roosters did it today, carry an outside back on the bench just in case. Potentially they might have to do that. I'd say he's a real 50-50 shot if they make it through to the final to play, because he'd need it to be a minor strain. If it's a partial tear, he's gone. But he'd need it to be just a minor strain to be any chance.
I'd agree with you there, Brian. I would probably lean towards out for Taylor. And I think the logical solution there for the Panthers, because they're so deep as well, you think Charlie Staines plays right wing and you flick Toto back to the left wing, I think would be the logical solution there. I tend to agree with you. I think Taylor's probably racing
the clock. I don't
think
Taylor and May will be the difference between them winning the GF or not, mate. As much as PVL says the fans, you know, will be greatly hindered by him not being there, I think, yeah, look, you know, they could. I mean, Robert Jennings looks good on the wing out there. Great future Dolphin, Robert Jennings.
Very
looks,
true.
Yeah, looks like a good gun. So.
good segue. I was like, where's he going with this? Oh, there's a segue to the Dolphins. Well done. Next game, Brian, we'll move forward to the Storm versus Raiders. Big concern at this one was to Adam Elliott. So, in terms of the injury here, Brian, I thought at first glance it looked like a cork or a hip pointer. You might have a little bit more light to shed on this, though, from recent social postings.
Yeah, so I was kind of in and out of this game, cooking dinner for the fam and stuff like that. So it initially got reported as an abductor, hip abductor injury. So abductor is the muscles kind of on the outer side or the lateral side of the hip. So the muscles that get done when you get like a hip cork or a hip pointer. So I went back, saw that tackle that I've posted where Asofa Solomona drills him in the hip. So thinking, yeah, okay, hip abductor, away we go. But in post-match, you know, I guess interviews and stuff like that, he actually said, Adam Elliott said, he said he was pretty cooked because he felt a crack near the midline of his pelvis. So for you and I, we'd call that the pubic symphysis. But for anyone at home, effectively, if you go, and I'll be as PG as I can here, if you go to the midline of your groin and then you come up towards your belly button a little bit and you feel like that hard bony bit, that is your pubic symphysis. So if he's felt a crack in there, that is a big concern, you know, potentially whether there's a small fracture in there. You can get some little instability in because there is a joint in there. So potentially he's got some instability there. I think the biggest thing, obviously, if there's a fracture, he's, yeah, no chance. He's gone for the rest of the final series. But pain in this area, in around the pubic symphysis, is so tough to play through. Like, it is really, really debilitating. It can present as groin pain, you know, like I've, footy players come in having testicular pain from it. Like, it can go out to the hip. It really affects you when you're running. It's a hard one to needle up and play through. So even if he's got, like, you know, like a little cartilage tear in there or something like that, even like some ligament laxity that is super painful, it's going to be a really tough one to play through, I reckon. So I think he's definitely doubtful to play next week, if at all, for the rest of the finals.
Good call, Brian. I was interested in just thinking to that mechanism, if he's got like a true pubic symphysis disruption or whether there's ligament injury, I don't know if you've seen any of these yourself in clinical practice, but a lot of times when you have high impact motor vehicle accidents, some people can have a complete tear through that structure and have what's called like an open book pelvis fracture. Yeah. So they're a really, really serious fracture that's a medical emergency and obviously needs surgery to, I guess, intervene in that situation. But I wonder in his situation, if he got hit at the right angle, if it was just the force of the translation through the pelvic innominate that sort of, I guess, disrupted things at the front of his pubic bone there. I don't know. It's interesting to sort of speculate on. I'd love to have an inside word into the Raiders team about, you know, what his imaging looks like and where his symptoms actually are, because it creates a lot of questions in my brain just from my curiosity, hey?
Yeah, well, I reckon if there's no fracture, they're just going to call it a pelvis injury, which will frustrate the hell out of us because, as you say, yeah, like, for professional curiosity, I'd love to actually know, you know, is there, like, what's going on in around that pubic symphysis, because it is, you know, it's an area that's not commonly injured, but it would be really interesting for us to sort of know the ins and outs of what's going on there. I don't think we'll get it. I mean, fingers crossed, we'll see how we go, but yeah, look, I think for you guys listening at home, probably the main thing is that super, super tough one to play through. So even if he does play, I'd question how effective he would be and sort of how, like, he'd need that many needles and then probably, you know, could aggravate it during the game. So he'd be a real risk even if he was named.
Especially in a team that's fairly deep in the middle there, Brian. Yeah. So I guess Adam Ellie's been fantastic for that team, but I think they've got a reasonable amount of coverage there based on the bench. So I'd be shocked to see him line up. But again, we don't really know a huge amount of his in-depth injury, but he looked pretty crook walking off the field, didn't he? He had that real, I guess this is a bit of a physio term, but you know how some people have like a, when they have a really antalgic or limpy type gait, they have like a hip sort of limp compared to a knee limp. Yeah. He really had like that hip sort of type limp, didn't he? Just looked really, really, really no good. So fingers crossed for Adam Elliott. It might not be something that costs him too much time. And if the Raiders can get over the Eels, he may be a shout for maybe a week or so. It's hard to really know, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%, mate. He looked like, I think I had an old digger say to me once, I look like a guy who's just hopped off riding a horse for 3 days. And I think that's exactly what he kind of looked
like. Yeah, wasn't he? All right, that's a good summary about Adam Elliott, Brian. He's one that I really, really am going to keep a close eye on if anything else comes to light through the media. Next game was Cowboys versus Sharks. No injury reports out of this game, Brian, but what a sensational game of football. I was just frothing this game for the whole 92 minutes. It was just good, good, good footy. And Cowboys, they're shaping up. They're going to be one to watch with the home final up there now. So,
mate, two possible injuries to look out for here. Jason Taumalolo possibly dislocated his shoulder, throwing the best left to right cutout I've ever seen in my life. Because if he threw it that far and that fast with that much accuracy, like I'm sure he had to have thrown his shoulder out of something. And then Val Holmes, you know, did he dislocate his hip? Just sending it over from 45. Like, didn't even hit that well and just didn't. Yeah, just amazing. What a game. As you said, like, I kind of, saw a little bit of the Storm and Raiders in and out. And there wasn't, I mean, Matty Tomoko sort of, you know, palmed Munster into oblivion and that was pretty cool. But, yeah, this Cowboys-Sharks game just had that many moments. Like, even that Sharks try where they did, they worked it really, really well around halfway. Sent
down the short side.
And into Kennedy back inside. Yep. I'm like, oh man, that, like, those kind of set plays just get me going. Like, I love that stuff. And so that game was just like not much defense at times, but I think it was more the prowess of the attack of both sides was phenomenal.
Yeah. Like, massive shout out to Nicho Hynes. He was everywhere for the Sharks. And I think the Sharks played really good footy. They were very unlucky to lose that game. You know, the Cowboys got it done, you know, got 8 points in the last few minutes and got Taumalolo pretty much the very last play of the game. So what a game of footy, but it'll be interesting to see how those teams go moving forward, especially the Sharks. You have to think, are they going to be able to get up for a game in a week after 92 minutes and coming up short there emotionally and physically? I think that'll be very interesting to watch whether they get bounced out. And I think the Cowboys with a week break, they're shaping up nicely, aren't they?
Oh, big time. Yeah, I think up in Townsville, be good watch.
Very good. Roosters versus Rabbitohs, Brian. What a unusual game of football this was with all the sin bins and all the shenanigans in between. So we'll cover a few things here. I firstly wanted to say more a shout out to Jared Weir-Hargreaves. He was listed with a hemi concern last week on a background of a hemi injury earlier. He actually played pretty big minutes when he wasn't sitting down in the sin bin. So I was pretty impressed that he actually got through this game seemingly without much concern for the hamstring. So I thought that was just one I just observed here. Concussion concerns here, well, I'll list them off so you can delve into them in a bit more detail, Brian. So Tedesco, Angus Crichton and Tom Burgess got ruled out with concussion. And Taukeiaho passed his HIA. Someone explain to me how that happened, because he played the ball facing towards Manly as opposed to Bondi Beach. And Dan Tupou was a groin injury from that game as well, which I would wonder if he needs something in the off season for that, or whether it's just a more of a muscular type injury that can be managed with a little bit of rest. But do you want to give us a really in-depth run through of those concussion concerns, Brian? Because it really shaped the outcome of this game, didn't it?
Yeah. Look, I mean, this was just an absolute, I'm going to say it, clusterfuck. Like just what a horrible way the game ended up going. Yeah, look, so many sin bins, so many high shots. I think, like Ashley Klein, you know, there's people who are criticising him and not criticising him and stuff like that. It was just, it's hard to point your finger at one person and or one group of people and say, you know, it was good or it was bad or these guys were at fault or whatever. I think everyone just let it run wild. Tom Burgess, he's probably the one. He's got a 7-day turnaround. Obviously, once again, like Mitch Moses, we'll just have to go through the protocols. We'll need independent clearance from a doctor. The one I wanted to point out from James Tedesco and Crichton was Tedesco, because it got announced that he was actually going to come back on Fox. So it came out after the game that he actually passed all his HIA protocols and was preparing to come back on, and then his condition degraded effectively, so he started to get symptoms. Now, look, it hasn't been confirmed, but the most likely scenario here is that Tedesco himself has self-reported symptoms. In that, you know, he might have passed through everything, was sitting there and then has said, oh, actually, I'm starting to get headaches, I'm starting to get lightheaded, all that kind of stuff. And I guess I just wanted to shine a light on that and say, if that's what's happened, and it sounds like the most likely case, then fair props to Teddy, because there's not many, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of players who would have just swallowed that and ran back out there on such a big game, and look, potentially the symptoms were bad enough that he couldn't even, you know, hide it, and they were quite obvious. But yeah, look, like, you know, we've always got to applaud players who are sort of taking these head knocks really, really seriously, and I think in this situation it definitely has happened. Now, we'll go from, you know, giving Tedesco a rap and the Roosters and all that kind of stuff to saying, how the hell did Taukeiaho pass his HIA? Like, you mentioned to me off air, like Joey Johns is saying that he saw the legs go jelly after he copped the head clash, and that he played the ball in the wrong direction, mate. Like, how's that not a clear category? Like, if we're talking about category one signs, like, you know, disorientation, I know he didn't specifically stumble, you know, lose his balance, but he's disoriented. Like, you know, that's got to be, for me, I don't see how that's not, you know, not a sign that, okay, this guy's got to stay off for the day, no matter, because it's the same with, you know, if he does have a little stumble, right, he can pass all the tests in the shed, but you go, sorry, mate, you stumbled on the field, so we're going to keep you off for today. Because, you know, even though you show all the signs that you look good in the sheds, on the field you stumbled, and so for us, the guidelines are that we've got to keep you off for the day. How is a guy playing the ball in the wrong direction not in the same category? Like, how do we not sit there and go, okay, he's passed through everything in the sheds, he looks fine at the moment, but out on the field, he hopped up and was so disoriented, he played the ball in the wrong direction. That to me, I think there's a bit of a mismatch there. You know, I'm sure we won't. The NRL doesn't tend to release any explanations of those kind of things. And there was that much going on in that game. I'm sure it will barely rate a mention going into next week. But yeah, certainly from our perspective, something that we noticed. And Dan Tupou with the groin, mate. Like, I know I think it was 2 years ago, he completely tore the tendon off the bone and didn't have it surgically repaired, because it can sort of scar up and stuff like that, and you can get by. But I just wonder with whether now that he's having these kind of issues and stuff like that, as you say, whether he's going to need further intervention, you know, potentially even a groin groin reconstruction, like a groin release, that kind of thing, potentially if they're looking at it and he's done further damage today or something like that. So that'll be something to watch for Tupou. Like, it is rare to need groin surgery for those kind of recurrent strains, but yeah, definitely something to watch in the next season.
Will be something to watch. And I agree with your take on Taukei. I think watching it live, you can see within the contact, the leg drive stops. To me, it looked like there was clear sort of, at least he looked like he, you know, even for a short period of time, looked dazed at minimum. And then obviously if you're playing the ball the wrong direction and walking away from it, not knowing you played it in the wrong direction, you know, I think there's a few questions to be asked there. I think especially given how many concussions there were in that game, you have to question, you know, why did this one slip through the cracks with the independent sort of bunker assessment, if you know what I mean, as well. So I think that's something that the NRL probably needs to keep a little bit of an eye on. So that would be my only sort of take on that as well, Brian, just to add a little bit more to the mix there. Last thing we'll talk through is the NRLW injuries, Brian. Tamika Upton's nursing a calf injury. It's not reported to be of major concern, I don't think. Lavinia Gould from the Bronx also had a calf ankle injury. She only played a couple of minutes in that game. And then the only other concerns from there was Kezia. She had what looked like a shoulder burner, but she eventually sort of pushed through there. And Holly Wheeler, who plays in the lock position there as well, she looked like she got similar to a hip drop mechanism tackle, Brian, where she had one person up high, one person was down low and sort of fell with the ankle in an inversion sort of mechanism. She was able to play on for a little bit of time there, but it was sort of an eerily similar thing to a hip drop tackle that we've seen with so many players in the NRL this year that have had major concerns from that point of view. So hopefully for Holly, nothing too significant. Do you want to give us any more update about any of those girls as well, Brian, if you've got any extra information to add?
Yeah, I think Upton's probably the big one with the calf. She's been carrying that for a few weeks. So look, no reports of her, you know, and she was named for the week. So I'd say it's just something where they've gotten to the point where they're like, she needs a week's rest. At max, maybe next week she'll have another week, but I'd say she'll be available for finals. So that's probably the biggest one. Lavinia Gould, I briefly saw it. She only played a couple of minutes. It almost looked like it was non-contact. She was kind of running up, but it didn't really look like Achilles. They got her to do some heel raises, some calf raises sort of after doing it. So she was able to calf raise pretty effectively, which would effectively usually rule out any sort of Achilles rupture, but it was a non-contact injury. So whether she's just got a calf strain there or something like that, I'm actually interested in that one to sort of see what that comes back with.
Yeah, good call. That'll be a nice, interesting one to look through. I don't know if you called it as well, Brian, in NRLW, but the highlight of the week for me was Jamie Chapman's long-range try.
Oh,
it was
mate.
An absolute
fantastic.
Cracker.
Fantastic.
Man, it was good. You just love to see it. But heartbreaking loss for the Bronx, but we won't talk about that for too much longer. We'll wrap the injuries up there, Brian, and we'll move straight into the Patreon Q&A. So as you mentioned earlier, patreon.com/NRLphysio is Brian. That's got all the detail, all the things you want, all the things that you need, all the things that you desire. So we've got a few questions to talk through here, Brian. So I think question number one starts with, do you think there should be any onus on the attacking player not to put themselves into a dangerous position? So I guess the scenario here is if someone falls into you, why should you as the tackler be punished if there's nothing you can do about it? So whether that's, you know, high contact that seems unavoidable with, you know, especially in relation to reaction time. So if you physically cannot react quick enough to get out of harm's way there, why do you think the attacking player... or do you think they should be punished as the attacking player or defensive player there?
Yeah, I think this, like, unfortunately, as much as I love black and white in the game, this is a really grey area. I think there's absolutely argument, and it's what I've been calling for since the Magic Round, you know, crackdown, which was just absolutely ridiculous in how quickly it was brought about into players who were just getting used to, you know, the six again rule, fatigue, all that kind of stuff, had that thrust upon them, and then these crazy ridiculous rules of any contact to the head was going to be 10 minutes. And my big thing that I tweeted about many times in that time was that not all contact to the head is created equal. And the like, you know, you and I are happy to hop on here and criticize rugby union for many different things that it has, but something that it has that's really, really good, and while I don't agree with, you know, probably how hard they go at times on some, you know, like incidental head contacts and those kind of things in terms of head clashes, but they have a really, really good matrix that they work through. So if you're a punter or you're somebody, you can start at the top and there's a question, you know, the first question, okay, is there head contact? Yes or no? Yes. And then you go to the next one and there's a real matrix of questions and you follow it down and you know exactly what you're looking for with these mitigating circumstances. So did the tackler fall suddenly? Were they unsighted? All that kind of stuff. So I think there is onus on the attacking player in the sense that I don't think all contact to the head should be penalised equally. I would love the NRL, and even today, I mean, Tom Burgess wasn't sent off for that first hit on James Tedesco because they cited mitigating circumstances, which is something they have I've heard it like once or twice. Ever, because they've always been, you know, the thing was, and the thing's always been from the NRL, any contact to the head, that was what they were saying back at Magic Round. They've claimed that they haven't changed the rules and that the players are just behaving better, but that's just not true. It's definitely changed now since Magic Round last year. So I would love the NRL to come up with some sort of decision-making matrix so we can understand exactly what they're looking for. But effectively, yes, there is room for mitigating circumstances so that not all head contact is treated equally. There are even cases where head contact should not be a penalty. There's guys, I think there was even one today potentially where like the guy was pretty much at knee height or ankle height and almost dived down himself. Maybe it was last night. And there was like light head contact and it's like, well, you know, like the guy's effectively put himself in that position. But where I have a problem and probably where I differ with a lot of fans is that if a tackler is upright, so if I'm standing there in an upright position ready to make a ball-wrapping tackle and the tackler dips a little bit, so maybe 10 to 50 centimetres or something like that, let's even say 50 centimetres at the last minute, that's still a penalty because you're in an upright position. You're putting yourself in that position where you have to allow for the fact that the tackler, the ball carrier can move slightly before the line, like whether that's up, down, sideways, whatever. So if you've put yourself in a position where your shoulder is up high, that increases the risk to the ball carrier. So I think those ones I'm more than happy for them to be penalties and sin bins and whatever, but it's the ones where they end up, you know, diving down towards the ground that, you know, I've got no problems with that not becoming a penalty if it's, as long as it's not like a swinging arm or something like that.
Good call on the mitigating circumstances, Brian. I like that as a concept. I think it's probably just one thing that NRL needs to sort of look at in terms of, well, what was the, you know, the height at the point of contact, you know, what are the other circumstances? Was there, you know, a slip in the lead up? Was there this? Was there that? You know, was it almost incidental? I think even a good example was, well, it wasn't a concussion, it was ruled off, but Taka today was a head knock. So obviously in that situation, I'm pretty happy with that not to be a penalty. But I think in any one, like, you know, even Tom Burgess, I'm pretty happy with that to go for more than a penalty there, just given the nature of the tackle as well. But every tackle is different. You know, I think you're not going to get complete consistency, but I think it's always going to be gray and we just have to accept that as well.
Yep, definitely.
Very good. Next question, Ryan, number two. So Patreon subscribers here want to know, what are the questions that get asked for an on-field HIA assessment? Can you run us through the questions that get asked on the field?
Yeah, mate. So they're called Maddox questions and they're for memory assessment are the main ones. So the trainers will go out, physio go out, whoever it is. And it's just mainly to, you know, make sure the guys are, you know, with it. So, you know, what venue are we at today? Which half is it now? Who scored last in this game? Which team did you play last week? Did you win last week? All that kind of stuff. So just trying to test their memory, make sure that they know where they are, what they're doing, you know, and then not just testing like their memory for that day. It's also from last week or the last few days or something like that. So that's kind of the main questions that they ask. And then they'll obviously do, like if guys are there, they'll check their neck and those kind of things to make sure there's no cervical spine involvement. Then they'll do a quick balance check. And that's pretty much the, I guess, where the on-field check stands at this stage, is memory questions, checking the neck. You'll do a bit of checking, you know, for alertness and stuff like that. But a lot of times when the guys get out there, they're standing up and, you know, stuff like that. They're not down on the ground, you know, passed out or knocked out or anything. So, yeah, mainly just memory, neck, balance.
Yeah, nice one. Good summary.
Sweet, guys. All right. That's the questions. Let's move on to, well, usually Supercoach Corner, but Supercoach is over, mate. So let's run through our mixer picks. How did you go this week?
Yeah, 474 for me this week, Brian.
So it got me by 1 point.
Yeah, I think I got you by a single solitary point. How good. Thanks for coming. so this week, yeah, I put the boost on Cleary and Bremner. So my team was comprised of Harry Grant, Georgia Hale, Gus Crichton, Nathan Cleary, Isabel Kelly, and Sammy Bremner. So I think reasonable score this week, just with the boost with Cleary, it makes it look a lot better. Obviously, Sammy Bremner was not a huge score this week. Would have been nice to chuck it on Isabel Kelly, but I think 474 is probably a bit over par, so not too shabby from that point of view. And obviously, Angus Crichton getting ruled out with concussion sort of minimised his score a little bit, despite him scoring a try. So in terms of next round, I think Nicho Hynes is a no-brainer in sort of the halves there. He was so good in a beaten Chuck side, mate. Fired, he was really good the other night. So he was unlucky to lose. The other people I've got my eye on is probably either Damien Cook or Reid Marnie in the nine. And then on an edge, I'll probably lean maybe towards Colin Matangi. I just think he's due for a try or two. Or, you know, the other person who's playing out of his skin is Hudson Young. He's getting Kangaroos call-up vibes from a few of the commentators there, which it might be a little bit overstated, but he's certainly playing pretty good footy, isn't he?
Oh, mate, my one thing with him, I was exactly the same as you until just because I'm getting used to this new, you know, scoring system, is that I thought he had a whale of a game, scored a try. I logged on thinking, oh, yeah, he's going to have scored like 70 points, and he just scraped 50. So that's kind of probably the one concern for me, because I was the same as you. I was like, oh, man, I'm on the Raiders. I reckon they're doing pretty well. But I wonder whether this scoring system doesn't suit the type of player Hudson is as much as some others.
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? So maybe more that workhorse sort of type edge back row. I think edge is a pretty tricky one to sort of pull out at the moment. I think Genghis Crichton was the best there, but now the Roosters are cooked, so you've got to look sort of elsewhere to see where else you can sort of cover that way. I guess in terms of NRLW players, Brian, probably not many others of interest there. I think Taufer and Georgia Hale in the middle there for the Titans and the Eels, it just locks for me. And, you know, I think Isabel Kelly, there's not been anyone sort of jump out is going to be a better option than her, nor Sam Bremner, to my opinion. So I'm probably not looking to change my NRLW players really at all, to be brutally honest. What about yourself?
Mate, so 473 for me, as we said, doubled up Cleary. Bremner, it was her first down week, I'd say, but yeah, look, as you're saying, I don't know how you can go away from her. Sort of from the NRLW, look, I'm kind of eyeing off Amber Hall, Bremner and Kelly at this stage. Amber Hall, just because I'm getting a bit frustrated with Koenig on an edge, you know, going big and going small and those kind of things. Amber Hall just seems to pump out 50 points each week. But if I can find an edge or fullback NRL option, I really like Georgia Hale, man. She is killing
it. She's so good,
mate. Killing it. Putting up like, 55 minimum and up to 70 points. Just smashing it. So I really want to try. I said it last week, and I want to try and work to get her in. I think Hynes is an absolute lock. You just put him in and double him up. I'm kind of tossing up Tapanay, Murray, or Papali'i are my three forwards that I'm sort of looking at. And then Cook, like, he went off early today, so that gives me a bit of pause for him. He might be struggling a little bit post-COVID. I don't think there was any injury there. I think he was just a bit tired. And but otherwise, Blake Brayley, mate, like, he's still, you know, he's one of those guys who I usually wouldn't consider a super coach option, but in this scoring system, and he plays, you know, the full game, he's racking up big tackles. So he's someone I've got my eye on as well.
Yeah, I think Georgia Hale on that point again, Brian, not to badger there too long, but plays exactly like Cam Murray for mine, just in the women's game, just plays that short link role, makes a million tackles. Her and Taufer are the only middle players who go the full 70 as well. So I think you just have to have one of those two in your team, don't you? She's just super consistent. She's really, really, really good.
Yeah, love it, mate. I love looking at the NRLW from a fantasy perspective and sort of picking up on players. You know, like I never would have sort of paid too much attention to just how big a workhorse the likes of Georgia Hale is before this season. So it's really cool to sort of get behind this, and hopefully it just grows. Hopefully there's a super coach comp for it next year.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'd be awesome. It's already good fun. I love it.
Yeah. No, good stuff. Good stuff, guys. All right, that's a wrap for this week. Nice bit quicker this week. Not as many injuries. But look, if you like the pod, as always, review, recommend to a friend. If you want more info like this, head to patreon.com/NRLphysio. Otherwise, if you've got any questions, I've put out a thing for questions on Twitter. I'll probably open it up a little bit as interest or injuries and stuff have died down, for a few questions. If you want to discuss anything more at length, but otherwise, James, mate, you can go enjoy your Sunday night. And who are your tips for next week is my biggest question to you, my friend.
Oh, my God. That's a really good question, actually. I probably lean towards Para. I think Para should be able to get it done, and I'll probably I like the Bunnies as well. I'm going to go Para Bunnies, I think. Sharky's coming back off that loss. They're not going to be playing in Cronulla. They're going to be playing in a different venue. There's going to be stadium politics there at play. Depending if they don't have too many suspensions out of today, there's a bit of niggle and all that sort of stuff going on for the Bunnies. But I just think they're probably the team, I think, that can do some damage deep into the final. So I'm probably going to lean towards South Sydney and take the Eels on the bounce back.
I like it, mate. Well, just to play with your head, I'm going to go the absolute opposite for both games. I'm going to go the Raiders. I've been on them this week mainly because Melbourne were a bit short, but I just wonder how the Eels are going to go with the uncertainty around Moses this week. The Sharkies, I just liked what they brought in attack, not so much in defence. I would not be against old Lachie Miller coming in for Will Kennedy. That is for certain. But yeah, mate, I think they're both toss-ups. It'll be a cracking week. But
beauty
otherwise,
games.
Have a good week, everyone, and we shall talk to you next Sunday night.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from.
That's about it, mate.